There is nothing like a one-off win-or-go-home baseball game. They're not fair, they're not for the faint of heart, but they are glorious. And there is nothing like carrying your hometown team to the finals and being interviewed while your teammates get down behind you. Get down, teammates, get down. Let's go.
Gotta get up to get down.
Chris Taylor, straight to legend status last night. There are not many walk-off wins in playoff history in winner-take-all games. Taylor is the fifth in the history of baseball. So how the Los Angeles Dodgers, defending champions of the league, survived last night, and how the magnificent month ended for the St. Louis Cardinals. Jun Lee, I don't need to say any more. Around the horn to you. Should the Dodgers feel lucky or good?
They should feel good. I mean, you win 106 games in the regular season. It doesn't go to waste in the one-game wild card. And then Chris Taylor, who was an all-star this year, and has hit a 111 since August 27, which is the lowest in all of Major League Baseball among qualified hitters. He came through and hit a walk-off. It means that your bench was deep, and then you also had someone like Kelly Jansen come through, who has been up and down throughout the course of this year, come in and strike out three guys in a really, really big spot. The Dodgers have to feel good about where they are, especially given the level of talent on this roster. Now, they're going to be facing a really, really big challenge in their division rival in the Giants, but this is one of the most talented rosters that we've seen in a really, really long time, and it's coming together right now.
L, after last night, should the Dodgers feel lucky or good?
Well, I have to say that we're all lucky that they won so that we don't have to, as June alluded to, have a complete referendum on the entire playoff
system. You can if you want. We're all here.
And is it a fraud because a 106-win team isn't on the playoff? God, thank God for that. So thank you for that, Doyers. I would say that they're good, and as instrumented by, or rather as we saw yesterday, by the two guys that were really important in this win, right? Max Scherzer said that Chris was tailor-made for this moment, right? To come in the seventh on defense and actually do this. And Cody Bellinger, right? Like, saved by the Bellinger. Here's the thing.
Okay.
If you didn't watch the Dodgers beyond last night, though, Tony, puns aside, you would have actually thought that those were two guys who had been hot, and they had not. Cody Bellinger has had about as bad as offensive output as you could have this entire year, and yet he reached base three times yesterday, and he stole second base twice. He was huge. Chris Taylor has had an awful last 22 games, and here he comes through in the clutch. He wasn't even starting because of it. So I love the idea that this team is so good that you'll get contributions like that, contributions they will need as they face the Giants.
Puns out. Times. Let's go, Mina. Lucky or good, Dodgers last night, to win like they did in the one-off.
Yeah, I mean, look, if your opponents go 0-11 with runners in scoring position, which ties a single elimination game record, there has to be a little bit of luck involved. If, as Jun Lee and Elle have pointed out, the guy who hits the walk-off homer, Mariners legend Chris Taylor, is someone who has not only been batting well for a while now, but not been slugging at all, you're a little bit lucky. It doesn't mean the Dodgers aren't a good team. I think they're a better team, and I picked them to win. They just happen to have the baseball gods smiling upon them in this game, and good for
them. And Justin Tinsley.
I mean, even when you're good, you still need luck every now and then. But I want to focus on Chris Taylor, man. This is a moment you dream about as a kid when you're in the backyard. It's the bottom of the ninth. You're at home. You got a runner in scoring position. And then you homer. You homer, man. Like, I can't imagine a better feeling in baseball unless you do it in the World Series.
Yeah.
But look, I am so happy we get a PCH series now, the Dodgers and the Giants. This is what we all want. But I got to ask my man, June for a favorite. Call Rob Manfred, make this NLDS 7 games. I don't need just 5 games of this. I need 7 games.
Well, you're going to get 5 of it, and it's the most absurd division series matchup of all time because it's 107 wins versus 106, which is now 107 because they won last night. First time these two bitter rivals have ever met in the playoffs. 2 sentences or fewer, June. Who's got the advantage?
I have the Giants here just because they've been a more consistent team throughout the course of the year. But again, the baseball playoffs, it's 5 games. Anything can happen.
L. Duncan?
I'm going to go with the Dodgers because experience. And again, we've got see a couple of guys that are hitting their hot spot at the right time.
I think the margin in this one is as tight as June's fade, but I'm going with the Dodgers because of their incredible bullpen and also the absence of Brandon Belt, which I think really, really hurts the Giants.
They're the world champs until somebody beats them. Dodgers.
I mentioned that Taylor had the fifth walk-off home run in a win-or-go-home situation, or winner-takes-all, I should say. Anyone want to name another for a point in the history of baseball? Some have happened recently. Anyone?
The Dodgers.
Encarnacion
is correct. Yes. Chris Chambliss. Aaron Boone, anybody? Come on, people. Let's go. Bill Mazeroski. We move on. Red Sox Rays, best of five, game one tonight. The season split was 11-8 Tampa, but there's only two-run differential in all those games. And they were some of the best games this year. Wild pitch ending in one, a huge comeback for Tampa in another. June, who's got the advantage here as we start this best of five?
First off, I should have known Mazeroski because obviously I covered that game way back. The Red Sox have been kind of inconsistent throughout the course of this season. They've been up and down. And the story of the Rays is the depth. I mean, it's kind of a boring answer, but they have a roster top to bottom that's been contributing. If you look at the Rays team stats sheet, there's so many guys on that team who have contributed two wins above replacement. And you look at a guy like Wander Franco, who came in, you know, two-thirds of the way through the season, and he's one of the five best position players on that team. They traded away Rich Hill. They fill him in with Luis Patino and Shane McClanahan. Like, this is a team that has a lot of guys that maybe not a lot of people have ever heard of, but they're really, really good up to top to bottom, just because they have guys contributing on a week-to-week consistent basis.
Just an advantage Tampa or Boston?
I'm going to go Tampa, but this could go either way. Tampa won the season series. Boston won three of the last five. Boston has the names. Tampa has the first 100-win team from a bottom-five payroll since the 0-2 Athletics. But here's something that I think is very important and very concerning if I'm a Boston fan, especially with that bullpen. Tampa Bay has 113 more runs after the seventh inning than anybody else in the major league. So if they get the lead heading into the seventh, it might be time to cancel Christmas.
Kimes, who's got the advantage?
Yeah, the depth on the Rays is absurd, as you guys have alluded to. I mean, they've got four players with 20 or more home runs, and that doesn't include Nelson Cruz. I think the Red Sox have a good lineup as well, but I'm not as optimistic about their pitching, particularly their bullpen. And then in this game one, Eduardo Rodriguez, just not confident, I think, in his ability to win it.
El Duncan.
Especially because the Rays are so well-rested after clinching early, right? And the Red Sox can't start Evaldi, but more than two starts potentially in this series, and he's been their only consistent guy. You know what the Red Sox remind me of? You know, at the end of the night when you've had just like a raucous night and at the very end you're just fueled by like adrenaline and Red Bull? That feels like the Red Sox. Like, for a little while at the end of the season, it was like, these uniforms are giving us what we need, and then they needed the Yankees to like pick them in some sign of disrespect, so that fueled them to that wild card win. Now we see Alex Cora sort of using their recent series with the Rays, where they split at the Trop despite being, you know, ravaged with COVID, as a galvanizing inflection. But it just sort of feels like there's a whole lot of intangibles, and the fact is what everybody else said. The Rays don't have a bench. They just have starters not playing that day.
Ed June, I'll give you a last word after the horn. It's a good line.
I mean, I think the key for the Red Sox to be in the series is their bullpen. They've been really, really taxed since Martin Perez dropped out of the rotation, since Garrett Richards started struggling. Matt Barnes, who was an all-star closer at midseason, is not on the ALDS roster because of how much he struggled the last couple of weeks. This is a team that has really, really, really taxed their bullpen. They're going to need guys like Nick Pivetta, who was a starter throughout the course of the year, to be really good out of that bullpen. And they're going to really need to rely on a guy like Garrett Whitlock, who's a great Rule 5 pick throughout the course of this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, the series starts tonight. We'll move on. Thursday Night Football. Last week, I had a little fun at the matchup. The week before, I had a little fun at the matchup. This week, Rams-Seahawks. This is great on paper. Could I interest anybody in calling it a statement game? Mina, around the horn to you. Who you got? Wilson or Stafford? Pete Carroll after a win? Or Sean McVay after a loss?
I got the Rams in this one, and not because of Russell Wilson versus Matt Stafford or coaching, but because of the disparity in the two defenses. Look, the Rams defense doesn't look as dominant as they did last year. I think Arizona exposed some of the weaknesses on this team, particularly the linebackers and the cornerbacks who are not named Jalen Ramsey, and I think Russell Wilson will be able to put up points on them, but the Seahawks defense is a mess, and this Rams passing attack should be able to shred them like a block of cheddar. I just don't have faith in their ability to stop Matt Stafford on that side of the ball.
Your cheddar right there.
Oh, wow.
Times, Justin Tinsley.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to seeing Seattle today. Obviously, it's a big matchup because of the quarterbacks, Russ being Russ, Stafford after L. But honestly, like Mina said, this really comes down to the defense. Can Aaron Donald make life hell for that Seattle offensive line? And how can, Jamal Adams really put pressure on that Rams offense? But honestly, this boils down to one matchup, and it could be the best matchup of the entire week. I want to see DK Metcalf versus Jalen Ramsey. Last season, in a direct matchup with Jalen Ramsey, DK Metcalf had 8 targets, 4 catches for 44 yards. You know that's on his mind.
Are we going to get that, Mina? Is Ramsey going to roam with Metcalf?
If Russell Wilson plays this correctly, no. He should not throw to DK Metcalf when he's being manned up by Jalen Ramsey. That is how you beat this Rams defense. You stay away from Jalen Ramsey. And Arizona took that approach.
Drew and Lee, come on in.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what Matthew Stafford's going to do because, I mean, they made a couple of mistakes last week where Sony Michel fumbles. You know, Matthew Stafford kind of throws a bad throw and finds himself with an interception. I'm interested to see whether or not he's going to shift any of the game plan away from Cooper Kupp. He's really focused on throwing to him over the course of the last couple of weeks. And you also have Robert Woods, who's an incredibly talented wide receiver and hasn't been getting the ball as much. Like, I'm very interested to see whether or not we see an evolution here from Matthew Stafford in terms of how he's approaching this offensive game plan.
And L. Duncan.
God, I always hate having to do Seahawks topics with Mina because I feel like I am attacking her. And I'm not attacking
her. Go ahead, attack away.
I just picked the Rams.
You know the saying about, like, right, like doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, like insanity or whatever? The Seahawks are so befuddling because it feels like every single year, literally, they have the exact same flaws. It's like we've been paying so much attention to everybody else in that division. I'm really looking forward to sort of the nation really just seeing the Seahawks because you're seeing these numbers and that Russell Wilson is who he always is, efficient and protecting the ball, and he leads the league in a certain amount of metrics, per play metrics. Like, he's doing all those things, but he's still getting sacked, and their defense is still terrible. And it's sort of like, will the real Seahawks please stand up? So I'm sort of looking forward to seeing, like, who is this team and why are they still on a treadmill?
I don't know if you're going to get an answer to that tonight, L, but we do have, it just struck me, the Mina Bowl. You've got the Seahawks, the team of your youth, and you've got the Rams, the team you call games for the preseason. So let's put it all on the line. It's your tattoo, your Seahawks tattoo on your arm, versus your Radio Shack khaki pants and zip up that you have for the Rams, all right? One's going away forever.
How dare you? It's a Best Buy polo that I wear.
Buy ourselves next.
Around the Horn is presented by DirecTV Stream, part of Happy Hour.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guarantee Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, brought to you by Chase. Coming to you from the Seaport District at Pier 17.
You'll all remember this play from 2 weeks ago. Baker Mayfield throws an interception, violent tackle after the pick, and it's now reported and known that he partially tore his labrum in his left shoulder at this moment, and he's been playing through it. Wow. Wearing a harness, says it shouldn't affect his throws. This week, Browns, Chargers, another great game on paper. Mina Kimes, what's the cause for concern for Cleveland?
Well, I would say short term, there's a lot of concern because if your quarterback is playing through an injury, it's never good, especially against Joey Bosa and a very good Chargers defense while the Ravens are meanwhile contending. But I also think it's a source for comfort because, frankly, Baker Mayfield has been really bad the last 2 weeks. In fact, bad in a way that was kind of confusing to me, inaccurate, making uncharacteristically poor throws. And this might explain that. So in some ways, as a Browns fan, you actually feel better knowing
it. Might explain it, but he said himself it's not affecting his throws, he thinks. You disagree with that?
I don't know. I've watched him. I mean, the Minnesota tape was really not great, Tony. And, you know, especially throwing the ball downfield, that's something Baker Mayfield's always been good at. He's always been really accurate deep. And he was just 0 for 7, totally off. So I don't know what is happening, but hopefully it gets fixed.
Cause for concern for Cleveland?
Absolutely. Anytime your quarterback has a torn anything, it's a concern, especially in a division where Lamar Jackson is playing great and Joe Burrow looks really good this season. And Mina just mentioned the inconsistencies. He's 26th in QBR this season, whereas he was 10th last year. And since this injury, two of his five worst single-game QBR performances against man coverage have happened since 2019, so it doesn't look good.
I thought it was really interesting today that Browns offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt himself said that he hasn't seen the effects of this injury on Baker Mayfield's throwing, which is interesting. I mean, it's interesting that this information is getting out there now because he's obviously, as Mina mentioned, has had a lot of inconsistent throws over the course of the last couple weeks. Is this kind of a little bit of a public excuse for kind of his bad performance on the field? I mean, it is a really interesting balance that's happening because the Browns are probably saying that this isn't affecting him in practice.
Let's play devil's advocate and say that it's true and that he absolutely has this and it is affecting his playing time. What's indefensible is how the Browns haven't sat him at all. They said he hasn't missed even a single snap at practice. That doesn't make sense to me. If you are dealing with something that is causing you, as Mina Kimes just astutely said, and I trust her because she sees all the tape, is forcing him into some uncharacteristically bad-looking throws, how have you not tried to rest this a little bit? That's what I don't understand. So one side's telling the truth and someone's not. Is it because Baker Mayfield has shown to be inconsistent in his career, or is it because of this? If it's because of this, I tell you what, he's got a bad slate ahead between the Chargers coming up, the Cardinals coming up, and the Broncos.
So there is some concern. I'm sensing concern from this panel right here. We're going to move on. I said before Chris Taylor became a legend last night with his walk-off. Well, Candace Parker, legend status was already secured years ago in L.A. and Tennessee, but it's once again secured in Chicago. She had it in high school, gets it back now with this run with the sky to the finals. The sky just surrounding the sun as it does. Legendary performance. Justin, what did the sky and Candace Parker just accomplish? What did the sun just fail to do?
I want to focus on the sky. Like, they accomplished what Candace Parker set out to come back to Chicago for. She wants to make it to the finals. She wants to win a ring there. But I have to say this. That post-game interview she had last night where she was just talking about what everything meant to her, that was one of the greatest post-game interviews I've ever seen. And I teared up when she mentioned Pat Summitt because you can see the love and the sincerity in her heart with that. So salute to Candace Parker and the Chicago Sky.
I mean, she's made a massive impact, I think, on the culture of the Chicago Sky team over the course of this year. They've been really struggling to kind of get over the hump, and she's been the difference maker. And when you look at the 16 wins that Chicago Sky had this year, 15 of them was when Candace Parker was on the court because she was injured for so much of this year. I mean, her being on the court has made a huge difference in their performance over the course of this year. And so shout out to Vandersloot for recruiting Candace Parker using Garrett's popcorn and deep dish pizza and the Portillo sandwiches. Like, it has made a massive difference in
another assist for Vandersloot. There you go. El Duncan, what are you buying from this run?
I do. I love that it all started with, like, her stomach. By the way, if anyone from Atlanta wants to send me lemon pepper wings, I will gladly take those if you want to recruit me to come back home. No, I love this. I love this for Candace Parker, obviously. I love this for Courtney Vandersloot because she was on that 2014 team that made that finals run and then watched people force their way out. They didn't want to buy in. She kept saying, we were just a Candace Parker away from making an WNBA finals and winning, and now it looks that to be the case. As far as what the Sun did, it's kind of what the Sun do. I think, Tins, you would know this in the last, 25 years of the WNBA? We've only seen four teams not make a final after having the best record.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's been the
sun twice now.
What the sun do, you say? I mean, they had it incredibly. The sun went up and the sun went down. That is what the sun does. You're right about that. Last word, Mina Kimes.
Well, first I'll say, Al, you mentioned Courtney Vandersloot. 5 for 6 from three. Yeah. You're probably going to win if that happens. And then as far as Candace Parker goes, her impact on the team is obvious. But I would like to say it is unfair that any human being can be so dominant both at analysis on television and as a player. I guess God gives both hands to some people, but I'm jealous.
So now Aces beat the Mercury last night. We're going to need a game 5 tomorrow. There was a 24-0 run in that game. That's not a run. That's something maybe a little bit more than a run. L. Dubs, a nice run today. Justin Tinsley, you were in it too. But Mina Kimes, June Lee, that'll be our showdown in 2 minutes.
Last minute surge.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Around the Horn is presented by DirecTV Stream, part of Happy Hour.
An open and emotional, maybe vulnerable, Allen Iverson with Taylor Rooks, Bleacher Report, talking about wanting to be involved, with the Philadelphia 76ers in this stage of his life. Mina Kimes, June Lee, welcome to Showdown. Can you see Iverson being a value add as a member of the Sixers again, an employee, a front office ambassador of some kind?
Of course, it's Allen Iverson. Like, if he wants to be more involved with the Sixers, you make him more involved with the Sixers. There's a little bit of a lack of clarity about what that looks like. I'm not saying he should work for the front office, but as some sort of player liaison, no question.
I mean, Allen Iverson has fought a lot to come back to the NBA and back to prominence. I mean, he's the reason why NBA culture is the way it is today. So I think he'd be an enormous asset.
Wow. You're splitting the point, but an extra point there for Lee for that statement on Iverson. We'll move on. John Collins on Jared Allen last night. Can a preseason dunk be the dunk of the year? June, what are the odds this hangs on to the title, a dunk of the year all season?
0% because John Collins is too tall for it to be a memorable dunk, and it's also the preseason still.
Okay.
Wow, how dare you. I'll go up to 50% because, yes, John Collins is tall. Jared Allen is 6'11". Yeah. Do you know how high you have to get to achieve that kind of dunk?
I thought it was a great dunk. Height, I mean, we remember DeAndre Jordan, height, one of the great dunks. But 0% chance a preseason will hang on for the rest of the year. June Lee, 30 seconds of face.
During last night's game, Dodgers outfielder Chris Taylor wore a wristband that said Fair Ball from Advocates for Minor Leaguers, which is an organization that advocates for the rights and better pay for minor league players. Last week, I wrote a story about a mental health crisis going on in the minor leagues, and Chris Taylor is just the latest and one of many major league players who are starting to advocate. And so in order for minor leaguers to get better pay, they're going to need more major leaguers on their side to speak up for them because they were once minor leaguers too.
It's a wonderful piece, Julie. I mean, the old saying is, you want to know about America, learn baseball. Well, this is another view of America, and you brought that to light. Thank you for that, Julie. 23.5-hour break. We'll see you tomorrow.
Happy Hour is presented by DirecTV Stream.